Welcome to a very special presentation of the novel A Really Good Day by James Hosek. On its surface, it's a story about a remarkable round of golf. But if you're not a golfer, if you quickly change the channel, if you accidentally come upon a tournament on TV, I encourage you to listen anyway. It's a story about family and friendship. It's a story about redemption and second chances. It's a story about promises made and promises kept. It's a story about once-in-a-lifetime experiences. But most of all, it is one man's love letter to his family. That man was my brother, the author, James Hosek. Aside from being an amazing veterinarian, woodworker, gardener, husband, father, brother, son, and friend, he was a writer. Writers are often told to write what they know. And in this, his first book, he did that in more ways than I can count. It will make you laugh. It will make you cry. And it will make you stand up and cheer. So sit back and enjoy as Jim takes you on a fun, entertaining journey through 18 holes of golf and one man's really good day. Chapter 23. 18th hole. "Is there a doctor here?" screamed a frantic voice. Scott turned. He couldn't see where it was coming from.
"I'm a doctor," shouted another voice.
"Over here,"
shouted the first voice.
"What's going on?" Paul asked.
"Someone needs a doctor," Scott said.
"I heard that," Paul sniped.
"Who and why?"
Scott felt a grip on his arm.
"Scott, come with me."
It was Jake Fisher. He was tugging Scott back along to the front part of the 17th green. Scott could see a crowd of people hovering, and a man pushing his way in shouted,
"I'm a doctor. I'm a doctor."
"What's going on?" Scott asked.
"Gina sent me to get you."
"What's wrong?" Paul asked.
"Come on," Jake urged.
Scott and Paul followed the man, and he forcefully wedged them through the throng of people.
"All right," shouted the doctor. "Make room. Get these people out of here."
On the grass, supported on either side by Sally Bernard and Gina Beck, was Sarah. Her heels were dug into the turf, and her knees were up. Sally saw him arrive through the crowd.
"What's going on?" Scott asked. "Is she all right?"
The doctor turned to look at Scott.
"What are you doing here?" he asked, confused as to why the golfer was there.
"She's my wife," he answered.
"Well," he started to explain, "she's going to have your baby."
"When?"
"Any minute now."
"That's impossible. She's not due for another couple of weeks," Scott insisted. "What's going on?"
Sally explained.
"The contractions started getting worse and closer together. She was trying to get to the green to be with you when she nearly collapsed. Thank God Gina and I were here."
"What contractions?" Scott asked, confused.
"I didn't want to worry you. They've been kind of going on all day," added Sarah. "My water just broke, and the doctor here says the baby is on the way out."
"You can't have it here," Scott argued.
"Can't move her now," the doctor said, interrupting.
"Okay, Sarah. Get ready to push."
"This is impossible," Scott muttered, kneeling beside his wife.
Sarah's face contorted, and she reached for Scott's hand. The red-jacketed woman who had been leading the women around burst through the crowd with a handful of towels. The doctor spread some around.
"Push," the doctor urged.
"I can't believe my baby is going to be born on the 17th green," Scott said.
Sarah was now breathing rapidly. Sweat was pouring off her face. A bundle of jackets were propped up behind her.
"Come on, Sarah," Gina urged. "You're almost there."
"One or two more pushes," the doctor confirmed. "I can see the top of its head."
Alf Redding had his camera shouldered, and as people saw him, they automatically spread and let him through. Suddenly, there was a tug on the back of his coat, and he almost fell down.
"Where do you think you're going?" Ellie asked him.
Hal shrugged out of her grip. Hey, there's a big human interest story going on in there. He indicated the crowd being held back by a dozen or so red-jacketed officials.
There's a kid being born. Let them alone, Alf.
Alf clicked on his microphone. Jason, you want me to try and get some footage of Hanover's kid being born? Jason's voice came over both their headsets.
Alf, is that you?
Yeah, boss.
This is a golf tournament, not a reality show.
What's the difference? Alf asked.
Ellie, can you hear me?
Yeah, she answered, realizing Alf's camera was pointed at her, and Jason could see her on his feed.
Have Lucy find out what the rule is here. Is there a penalty for delaying the match? Is Patterson still in this?
Sure.
Alf, go find Patterson. I want to know what he's up to. Oh, and Ellie, if she does have the baby, ask if we can get a shot of the family.
I'll see what I can do.
What's going on? Patterson asked the official standing with him at the 18th tee. Can't we get this over with? There's some sort of medical emergency, the official said. Why isn't Hanover here? He asked. I don't know. If he's not here soon, you'll have to give him a penalty for delaying play. That's two strokes, he insisted. And I'm back in the game, he thought. There will be no penalty, Mr. Patterson, answered a voice from behind him.
Carl Bateman, president of the Niagara, removed himself from his golf cart. Another large but seemingly more fit man got out from the other side of the cart. He held what looked like a small television in his hand.
The rules allow us to discontinue play for any reason we deem appropriate.
What good reason does Hanover have?
His wife is giving birth.
On the golf course? Why isn't she in a hospital?
Apparently, added the other man, she wasn't due for another couple of weeks, and she was out here watching her husband play. You must have noticed her following you two around. Only pregnant woman here.
Unbelievable.
I suppose there is a chance, continued Bateman, that given the circumstances, Mr. Hanover will not want to finish the round.
Andrew's eyes lit up at the prospect. He quickly subdued his excitement.
Well, it certainly would be understandable if he wanted to take his wife and child straight to the hospital. It would be the only sensible thing to do.
Yes, agreed Bateman suspiciously.
He and Frisk walked back to the golf cart and puttered back toward the 17th green. Karen Blakely, April Weinstein, and Tim Carousel stepped to the side as the golf cart rolled past them. They had heard through the crowd gossip that Hanover's wife was having her baby. They decided to try and track down Patterson.
Karen realized that there was a great chance Patterson had already lost the tournament, and she needed to talk to him. They found him on the 18th tee. A crowd of people were in the area awaiting the continuation of the tournament, most not aware of the events on the previous hole.
Andrew, Karen said, greeting him.
Rotten luck there, consoled Carousel.
Luck had nothing to do with it. It was my idiot caddy. I'd better not see him again. Certainly that moron's negligence can't affect any possibilities of a deal with your firm.
We have no deal, Mr. Patterson, Tim Carousel pointed out. I'm here to see the tournament. Miss Blakely's firm was asked to see if they might be able to produce a top amateur who we could deal with.
Are you kidding? Andrew asked incredulously. I'm 8 under par. Even with the 2 strokes I lost due to that cretin, that's a 64. If I par the next hole, that's a great score. Most pros don't shoot that well.
I understand, Mr. Patterson, but Mr. Hanover is 12 under. He's a birdie away from tying the professional record for 18 holes. Whom would you rather buy a ball from?
It's been all luck for him. Lucky shot after lucky shot. He hits a tree and it bounces back onto the green. A sudden win gives him an eagle. That isn't a good golfer. That's a lucky golfer.
Most of the people we sell to depend on lucky shots, Mr. Patterson. If they think our balls will make them luckier,
then we have an advertising campaign we can really sell.
April Weinstein cut in. Our agreement was to provide Mr. Patterson. He's the one whose career will be taking him to the pros in record time. He's the one who should be winning. She realized the argument wasn't a great one, but it was all she had.
Too bad you didn't sign up Scott Hanover, interjected another voice.
Oh no, Karen moaned. Not you.
Jake extended his hand to Carousel.
Jake Fisher, I represent Scott Hanover.
Really?
Said Carousel, drawing out the word with satisfaction. I'm Tim Carousel, Callaway Golf.
Pleased to meet you.
You planned this all along, didn't you? Karen asked.
April turned to Karen.
What are you talking about?
I had trouble getting back into the grounds because I lost my credentials. He vouched for me. He just wanted me to get Mr. Carousel here so he could swoop in and steal Patterson's endorsement deal from underneath me.
What can I say? Jake said. I have a knack for being in the right place at the right time.
Mr. Hanover certainly seems to be capturing the hearts of the crowd, Carousel pointed out.
This guy is washed up, April interrupted, referring to Jake. He hasn't represented a client for over a year.
You think he's any better at picking a spokesman for you now?
I pick the spokesman, Miss Weinstein. I can't control which agent represents him.
What if Patterson wins? Karen interjected.
If he wins? Asked Carousel. He's 4 strokes behind. Well, I suppose that would be an amazing comeback. 5 strokes in 1 hole. He'd have my admiration.
Just hold off on picking someone until the tournament is over, Karen urged.
Fine with me, Jake agreed.
The two women looked at him with surprise. Jake answered their stares with,
He is ahead by 4 strokes.
Yes, but his wife is having a baby. You think he's going to want to finish? I could score a double bogey on the last hole and still win, Patterson taunted.
Mr. Patterson, Jake said, Scott Hanover has already won in the minds of most people out here. You might end up the winner on paper, but he has already accumulated enormous respect, admiration, and displayed tremendous sportsmanship. You'd win the tournament by default, but you won't win anyone's heart, let alone their wallet.
They won't think that way once they find out Hanover is a cheater, Karen interjected.
What? The other 4 asked simultaneously.
The tournament officials found his ball in a water hazard on the 8th hole. They sent a scuba diver to get it. It's being checked as we speak. They think he's playing with non-regulation balls. He could be disqualified at any moment.
That's ridiculous, Jake said.
Well, we'll just see, won't we? Karen taunted.
Well, good points all around, Carousel told them. Let's see how things finish, shall we?
I think I would like to head toward the 18th green to wait this out, ladies and gentlemen.
He started to walk along the fairway. Karen and April, realizing he was walking away from them, turned and jogged to catch up and hopefully lobby a little more for their client.
You know, Andrew, started Jake. At first I was pretty disappointed that Karen Blakely got to you first.
Really?
I thought you were my chance to get back in the game, make a name for myself. But I've learned a lot today. Karen Blakely is your type of agent. I do hope you have a successful career, Mr. Patterson, Jake said, extending his hand.
Andrew stared at the offered hand in disbelief. He took it, not knowing if he'd get some sort of shock from a joy buzzer or other gag device.
I'll tell you a secret, Jake told him. Scott Hanover is not going to play in any pro-am tournament. By default, the offer will extend to the person who is in 2nd place.
Why wouldn't he take it?
Because he promised his wife this was going to be his last round of golf for a while. He's going to concentrate on his family. And he can't do that and prepare for an event like that.
Why are you telling me this?
To let you know that you are a good player. You need to work on being a better golfer.
Andrew looked confused. Jake smiled and started to walk back to the 17th green. He wasn't sure Scott was going to finish the tournament.
He wasn't even sure Scott was going to be interested in any endorsement deals from Callaway or anyone. But he was sure that he wasn't going back to where he was a day ago, or a week ago, or a month ago. He was going to someplace new, someplace he hadn't been before.
"It's a girl,"
shouted a voice. A huge cheer went up from the crowd, and applause rippled around the area. Word quickly spread to the clubhouse where speculation and betting pools had spontaneously popped up and were now being settled. Nothing like this had ever happened in the history of the tournament, and Jason Bernard was quite sure it was a unique event in sports history as well. The monitor was replaying Scott and Sarah's kiss on the 17th tee, and his amazing shot with the ball finally dropping in the hole with the help of the fortuitous breeze. As he watched the replay and saw Sarah and Scott staring into each other's souls, he noticed something he hadn't seen before. It was off to the side, but it was apparent that Sally had noticed the camera, and with a huge smile had mouthed the words, "Let's try," as a secret message to only him and the 18 million estimated viewers at the time. He sat back and rocked in his chair, a huge smile infecting his face as well. "Yeah," he said quietly to himself, "let's try." A lot of things had come into perspective for Jason today. He could always come up with excuses not to start a family. Sally had been patient, but after today she'd be intolerable. He'd always thought that if he could do this or do that, he'd feel he was ready. But there wasn't really anything he needed to do to make him ready to be a father. As soon as he found her after the match, he'd tell her, yes. Today was as good a day as any to start. Scott Hanover looked into his daughter's face and couldn't help but cry. Sarah had already beaten him to it, and only the doctor seemed to be able to control his emotions. The umbilical cord had been tied with a shoelace and cut with a Swiss Army knife sterilized under the flame of a lighter. "What are you going to name her?" Sally asked. Sarah looked at Scott. "We haven't really finalized anything. We thought we had a couple of more weeks to decide," she answered. "But I was kind of leaning towards Sally Gina Hanover." Scott chuckled and was pleased to see the genuine surprise on the other two women's faces. "It sounds terrific," he agreed. "That's not necessary," Sally said. "You must have other names picked out," Gina added. Sally looked at the other two women. "When I first saw my daughter, those were the two names going through my mind. And she looks so much like a Sally Gina."
"What?" Paul said, interrupting. "Like a wrinkly, bald, pink dwarf?"
Scott popped him a good one in the shoulder, and Sarah laughed.
"Exactly. In fact, if it was a boy, Paul would have been appropriate."
Ellie Burke worked her way through the crowd, and Scott noticed her smiling and staring at Sarah and the baby. He walked over and stood beside her. "Ellie, meet my daughter, Sally Gina Hanover." Ellie's eyes widened as she took in the name.
"Good name," she said. "If you guys wouldn't mind, I'd promised I'd ask if we could get a shot of the new family. It turned out to be a huge deal, but don't feel you have to."
Scott looked at Sarah. "What do you say?
Shall we share her with everyone?"
Sarah hadn't imagined her first moments with her child like this. She was supposed to be in the dimly lit birthing room at Evanston Hospital. Just her, Scott, and their child. A quiet, intimate memory that she would carry all of her life. But things were not as she had imagined. This day had started with her resenting Scott for wanting to play in this stupid tournament, and was ending with her being so proud of him. She had gained new friends, and had seen Scott's determination to fulfill his promise to her.
"Yes," she answered. "They should see the reason for all this fuss."
She handed the baby to Scott, and he cradled her as if he'd been doing it all his life. Sarah was pleased to see the love in his eyes. She had no doubt that Scott would love their child,
but seeing him express it so openly was heartwarming. Ellie pointed her camera at the couple seated on the fairway. "Smile, Sally," she said to the baby, as the picture beamed across the nation. A flash from the crowd captured the scene as well.
And here is Sally Jean Hanover, born today on the golf course, to Scott and Sarah Hanover. I'm told she's a little early, but baby and mother are doing fine, Jason said. As to what happens from here, it's anybody's guess.
Ellie lowered the camera. The red-jacketed woman approached them. The ambulance will be here in half an hour. There's a lot of traffic out there, she pointed out.
The sound of an approaching golf cart stole their attention.
It was one of the groundskeeping carts with a trailer attached. In the trailer was a large mattress covered with blankets and a few pillows.
The driver had a huge grin on his face.
"Stole these from a couple cots in the equipment shed. Don't tell anyone," he said, winking. "But we do take an occasional nap after an early morning mowing. They're clean and dry and warm. I'll give you a lift to the clubhouse."
"Sounds like a great idea," agreed Scott. "We can wait for the ambulance there." Sarah looked at her daughter. The crowd near them was silent.
Many of the people had smiles on their faces. In their eyes, she saw one question again and again. "Is it over?"
Scott passed the baby to Sally Bernard, and he and Paul helped Sarah into the trailer of the golf cart. Sally walked over and handed Sarah's daughter to her. Scott jumped into the seat next to the driver.
"Let's go," he said.
"Wait," Sarah said.
"What?"
Scott asked.
"What about the tournament?"
Sarah had asked the question everyone around them wanted to ask for the last 10 minutes.
"Heck with the tournament. I told you I'd stop golfing after she was born, and there's no way I'm not going to the hospital with you guys."
"You do have half an hour," Paul pointed out.
"It shouldn't take you that long," Sarah urged. Scott looked into her eyes with a questioning gaze.
"You want me to finish?"
"We want you to finish," she emphasized. "Sally Gina doesn't want to have to wait to see you golf again."
"I suppose I could, if I'm not already disqualified," Scott said.
"But I really want you to, Scott. It's important to you, and it's important to me."
"Besides," Sally pointed out, "you can't let Andrew Patterson win by default."
"She's got a point, Scott," Paul agreed.
Scott considered the arguments.
He was well prepared to walk away from the whole thing. Holding his daughter in his arms had made him wonder why he thought giving up his silly golfing for a few years would be such a hardship. She had such an amazing effect on him. She was a part of him, and he of her.
He saw her future flash before his eyes.
Her first steps,
starting school, her first date,
college, her wedding, having her own kids. What else could be as special as the little life he held in his arms?
"You're sure?" Scott asked.
"Go," Sarah said. "Win this thing. Do it for Sally Gina."
Paul shrugged. "Hey, man, if it's for Sally Gina, you pretty much have to. I think it's illegal not to or something." Scott looked at Paul.
"Let's go."
Jason Bernard watched the expression on Andrew Patterson's face as Scott Hanover pulled up to the 18th tee,
his chauffeured golf cart hauling a makeshift bed.
Word had made it to the control booth that despite the recent birth of his daughter, Hanover was going to play the last hole. The crowd erupted in delight. Cheers roared, and hats flew in the air. Patterson's disbelief was transparent, his head rocking from side to side. "And Scott Hanover is going to finish the tournament with his new daughter, along with his wife and Paul Bauer, his best friend and caddy, cheering him on. Not to mention the hundreds of people crowded around this last hole of the George Dunn National Golf Course," Jason announced. "This is certainly the hardest and longest of the par fours on this course, a true tester of these golfers' skills.
To say that Andrew Patterson is out of this would be a little premature. As we saw on the last hole, it only takes one little mistake to make a huge difference in the score. I'm sure Patterson was hoping for Scott Hanover to drop out, but his family and friends have convinced Scott to finish the hole. The same water we saw lining the left side of 17 lines the left side of 18 on the inside of the nearly 60-degree dogleg to the left. Sand traps line the right side of the fairway. Perfect distance on the tee shot is needed to stay out of either hazard and provide an open shot to the green that is protected by some overhanging trees on the right side. Scott Hanover's incredible hole-in-one on the last hole puts him 3 strokes away from tying the PGA record of 59 for the lowest score. A birdie certainly is not out of the realm of possibility, but very difficult on this hole. So far today, no golfers have birdied 18 according to the scoreboard, and only half a dozen have parred it. But from everything else we've seen today, if anyone can tie that record, it's Scott Hanover.
Jason watched as Scott Hanover and Paul Bauer conferred in the tee box. He opened his private line to Ellie.
"Any chance we can hear what they're talking about?" he asked.
"No, I have the wrong kind of mic, and it's getting a little windy in favor of the golfers."
"Just thought I'd ask."
"You'll find out what they're thinking when we do,"
Ellie said. "I suppose you're right."
The golf cart had been pulled around so that the trailer faced the 18th hole. Sarah and her daughter were comfortably seated on the mattresses. The crowd had been pushed back behind her so she'd have a good look at Scott's tee shot, even though his back would be to her. She was beginning to feel the effects of the delivery as the adrenaline wore off. It had taken more out of her than she wanted to admit, and she really needed the rest. Sally Gina had settled into her, nursing under a blanket. Surprisingly, the little girl had not cried much at all, but the doctor assured Sarah that her daughter was just fine. Sally and Gina sat on either side of Sarah. Both seemed to enjoy the prime viewing spot and were beaming with joy at being so close to their namesake.
"Do you think Scott can lose?" asked Sarah.
Gina turned to answer her.
"Only if he tries something stupid," she answered.
"Like what?"
"Like trying to hit over the water to cut off the dog leg."
"Cut off the dog leg?" asked Sarah.
"You know, hit for the green as the crow flies, not following the fairway around," explained Gina.
"Why would he do that?"
"He wouldn't," Sally said.
"He just basically has to finish the hole and he'll win. Andrew Patterson is going to finally lose, and maybe that Cecily Waterston will go down a peg with him."
"But Scott said he wouldn't play in the pro tournament."
"Oh, Patterson will get to do that, but only as runner-up, like Scott got into this tournament."
"Maybe he'll do as well in that one as Scott has done here," Sarah suggested.
"Maybe," Gina said, chuckling. "But as for this tournament, there's no way he is going to win."
Joe Culkin was able to work his way to behind Andrew Patterson. While Hanover and his caddy conferred on the tee, he whispered, "A personal check will be just fine," loud enough for Andrew to hear. Patterson turned to see the smiling man, his casted arm still slung in front of him. "Game's not over. You're 4 strokes down. Big Bird could beat you at this point." Patterson shrugged. "Luck has a way of turning on people just when they least expect it."
"Then let's double the bet," Joe said.
He surprised even himself with the statement, sure that Patterson would refuse such an offer.
"Okay," Andrew said.
$10,000.
"You're insane," Culkin pointed out.
"Losing a little of that confidence, Joe?"
"Not one bit."
Joe turned to Ted Lang in a sudden panic.
"There is no way for him to lose, is there?"
"Hundreds of ways," pointed out Ted Lang.
"But he's on the outside of the bell curve. He's got to win," Joe argued.
"Patterson is right that anything can happen. The guy's wife just had a kid. He's lost the momentum he had on the last hole. His back 9 without the hole in one has been good, but not spectacular. but 4 strokes. He'd have to hit it in the water twice, or get stuck in a sand trap or duff it 10 yards on his approach. All things that he has done before, and quite likely will do again. And I just doubled the bet. Relax, Joe. The odds that he'll lose are maybe only 10%. Really, the only stupid thing he could do is try to hit it over the whole pond on the drive and cut off the dog leg.
Why would he do that?
He wouldn't, Ted said. No one is that stupid. Then why, thought Joe, is Andrew Patterson so relaxed?
I doubt there is a single golf fan not watching this tournament right now. I've got to say, Carl, you put on a good show, Harold Fisk said, congratulating him. These are the top amateurs in Chicago, Bateman pointed out. It sure would be nice if this Hanover fellow could tie that record of 59. No way he can beat it, Bateman said. He'd have to drive it over the pond onto the green. I don't think even a pro would try that shot. Not in a million years, agreed Fisk. That would just be plain insane. Still, I've seen a lot of things I thought were crazy today. Well, continued Bateman, I can guarantee you won't see that.
Tim Carousel found a spot near the cart path leading back to the clubhouse from which to watch the final moments of the tournament. The whole thing with Hanover's wife having the baby had seemed such an unnecessary delay. What was she doing on the course so pregnant in the first place? Wholly irresponsible, he decided. Karen and April had remained silent. They had both been praying that Hanover wouldn't appear on the tee, but there he was, talking to his caddy and getting ready to finish the tournament. They wondered what his wife thought about her husband continuing to play, even after she had just given birth. He had to be nervous now. He had to be in a rush. He would make a mistake. Andrew Patterson could still win this. They had to believe that. Without it, there was nothing else. Jake Fisher held the paper on Scott Hanover. April wondered why Karen hadn't thought to sign him, too. You can't lose if you bet on all the horses. Karen knew it would take a miracle for Hanover to blow this one. If only that caddy had been paying attention, a 2-stroke lead was not impossible to overcome. Still, there was hope. There was a lot of water, and a lot of sand, and a lot of trees. She tried her best to will Scott Hanover to mess up. It was perhaps useless with all the other people hoping he did well, but it was worth a try.
We need to find out if they finished analyzing Hanover's ball, April told Karen. If he's cheating, these people need to know now.
Cheating?
A man standing next to her asked.
The tournament thinks he's using illegal balls, Karen explained.
No, we don't, interrupted another man. As a matter of fact, we found out that Scott Hanover's golf balls are just fine, so stop spreading rumors. Karen looked at the tall man with the red jacket. His name tag read Kenny Chase, and his expression showed the seriousness of his request.
He's not cheating? She asked.
Kosher as a pickle, added Kenny.
Now, I'd like to watch him play this last hole, if you don't mind.
Be my guest, Karen muttered. Her last hope for a miracle had just been dashed. There was nothing she could think of that would turn this around now. Carousel would pick Hanover and Fisher. It just wasn't fair. Paul held out a 3-wood to Scott with his left hand and placed his right hand on Scott's shoulder.
Just get it halfway there, Scott. 2 shots will put you on the green. Hey, a birdie and you get your name in the record books.
Not likely, Scott pointed out.
But it has been an incredible day. I'm glad you were here.
Wouldn't have missed it for the world. I got a cigar waiting for you in the car, Dad, he added.
Isn't she beautiful? Scott asked.
Yeah, whatever, Paul answered with a smile, then added, most beautiful kid I've ever seen, Scott.
Well, she's going to take a little while to grow into that face, but she'll be a heartbreaker for sure.
You'll be beating them off with a 5-iron, Paul agreed.
Hey, Do you think there is any way you'll take that invitation to the Pro-Am?
No, Scott said.
First of all, today aside, I'm not really that good of a golfer.
Yeah, but it'd be fun, hanging out with all the pros, playing on the real nice courses.
And I did promise Sarah.
Well, there is that.
And despite his being a jerk and dressing funny, Andrew Patterson deserves it more than me.
What about Joe Calkin?
If he hadn't broken his arm, we wouldn't be standing here having this conversation, and he'd likely be the one going.
Yeah, well, just one more thing to say.
What's that? Scott asked.
Quack, roared Paul and the entire crowd.
People began to applaud. A couple of guys even bowed down, muttering,
"We're not worthy, we're not worthy,"
in tribute to Wayne's World. Scott laughed and smiled and let a tear wet the corner of his eye.
Gosh darn it, he had nearly forgotten about the stupid quack.
But Paul hadn't, and everyone seemed to be waiting for it. He looked out at the stillness of the water, the dark green of the grass, the tints of fall colors creeping through the trees like splatters of paint. He looked up at the sky. It was crisp and blue. The clouds were brilliant white and very distinct. He turned around and looked at his wife, his daughter buried beneath a blanket, nuzzled warmly against her mother. This was going to be his last hole for quite some time. He reached into his pocket and pulled out his duck logo ball and green tee, holding the tee against the ball with his middle and ring fingers. He inserted the combination into the ground until his knuckles barely grazed the close-cut grass. He picked out his spot just to the right of the 200-yard marker, just the perfect distance for an easy three-wood. He drew his imaginary line to the ball and placed the club on the ground, then set his feet parallel to it. The crowd had become silent. Scott could imagine everyone holding their breath, awaiting his final tee shot. He took his practice swing, getting used to the club. It wasn't as familiar as his driver had become. He took another and a third. He stepped up to the ball, ready to pop it neatly onto the fairway, hopefully not too far into the sand or hook it into the water. What water? He reminded himself. He drew the club head back, then stopped. This wasn't right, he told himself. This wasn't how it was supposed to go. Something was wrong. It itched the back of his brain, and he tried to remember what it was he was supposed to do. He looked out across the water at the 18th green, and the crowds of people that had swarmed around it in the little space that was available. Paul walked up and examined the puzzled look on Scott's face.
"What's up?" he asked.
"How far?" Scott asked.
"How far what?"
"How far over the water?"
"To the green?" asked Paul.
"That's crazy."
"I know."
"That's insane."
"I know."
"It's stupid."
"Exactly,"
Scott agreed.
"How far?"
Paul answered without hesitation. 315 yards.
You seem pretty sure.
I checked it out last week. Just did a little trigonometry off the scorecard. I even tried blasting a dozen water balls across.
How many made it? Scott asked, turning to face Paul.
Paul grinned and shook his head.
None, Scott.
Still, it's a lot shorter than 450 yards.
A lot wetter, too,
Paul added. He waited for Scott to say something else. Murmurs were running through the crowd now.
If you miss, that cuts your lead to 2 strokes. You don't want to play with that.
I don't care if I win, Paul.
Then just hit your 3-wood out there.
I do care if I don't try.
We'll never ever be this close to something like this again.
Probably not, agreed Paul. Scott took a deep breath and held his club out to Paul.
Get me my driver.
Scott, old buddy, I've seen you do some amazing things today, but you ain't got that swing in the bag.
Sometimes you just have to go for it.
I can't believe this, Jason Bernard said.
He is going for it.
He just handed his 3-wood back to his caddy, and Scott Hanover is getting ready to hit his driver. One can only assume he will be going to try and drive the ball over the water hazard. Looking at the little map I have here, that has got to be well over 300 yards.
314,
came Fred's voice over his earphones.
On the fly. It's virtually impossible, even with the elevated tee. He hasn't hit anything close to that all day.
Jason swallowed and repeated Freddy's words and added, but if he does make it, his chance of entering the record books is virtually assured. If he misses, he'll automatically take 2 strokes off his 4-stroke lead and open a window for Andrew Patterson to take this tournament from him. I don't think I've ever seen anything so daring, or should I say stupid. He doesn't need to take this risk. It's not like a half-court shot when you're down by 2 at the buzzer, or a 50-yard Hail Mary pass from your own end zone in the final seconds of the playoffs when you're down by 5. This is seeing what he has inside of him, seeing if his incredible luck today will hold for 1 more shot. Or, perhaps, it's never regretting not taking the shot. How many times have each of us wished we had achieved just a little more, when perhaps good enough wasn't really your best? If he makes the shot or misses it, it will be historic. But if he never even tries, it'll just be another tee shot in an amateur golfing tournament. What a place to be, folks. What a place to be.
What's he doing?
Sarah asked. Gina was shaking her head, grinning.
He's going for it.
What?
He's going to try and hit it over the water. Oh my God,
Sarah said, praying.
You can do it, Scott. I know you can.
Joe Culkin buried his face in his palms. The idiot was going for it. He might as well write out that check to Patterson right now. He wanted to cry. Ted Lang shook his shoulder.
Hey, Joe, you know he has to try.
Joe nodded in agreement. He knew he would never do the same thing if he was in the same position, but he wasn't. Hanover had gotten further than he ever imagined, further than anyone had imagined. He would go out in flames, but he'd have no regrets. No, sir, not a one. God have mercy, he added. Andrew was confused at first, thinking that Scott Hanover was having some sort of problem, but then he saw the caddy slip the 3-wood back into place and remove the driver with its silly stuffed animal cover from the bag. His mouth grew into an enormous smile as he thanked God profusely for idiots like Hanover. He was still in this after all.
I knew it, Harold Frisk said. The man's insane. Carl Bateman added. Yeah, but he's insane in front of millions of viewers on my network. I love it.
Ellie swallowed hard as she watched Paul Bauer exchange the clubs. Hanover was really going to try and drive over the water. She quickly focused her camera onto the far side of the pond. There was a yard or so of tall weeds and grass before the rough leading up to the green. It was simply impossible to do. But today, she thought, the meaning of the word impossible had changed.
Listen, lay up with the 3-wood and get on in 2. A good putt and you tie the record. On the other hand, if you put your drive in the water, you're back here hitting 3 and kissing it all goodbye.
Scott looked over at the ball sitting on the tee. The yellow rubber ducky logo smiled at him. Then he turned to Paul and took the driver with the cover still on it, a gopher holding a plastic golf ball, from him. A murmur began rippling through the crowd. He knew everyone was thinking the same thing. This guy's going for it. Scott raised the club above his head, and a cheer broke out.
Go for it,
they shouted.
On the green.
A group of guys who maybe had snuck some alcohol into the forest preserve started singing. I'm all right.
Nobody worry about me. Why you gotta give me a fight? Can't you just let it be? The words and tune from the Kenny Loggins song that graced the closing credits of the movie Caddyshack spread through the mass of people like wildfire. Scott bounced his gopher doll to the beat, conducting the crowd, feeling a surge of adrenaline flowing. This was his day, his moment. He returned to the tee and pulled the cover off the driver. He draped it across Paul's outstretched arms like he was giving his gloves to a butler. He turned 45 degrees left in the tee box to face the flag. He stretched out his right arm with the club to line up his shot and let the club touch the ground about a yard behind his ball. As if on cue, the singing and clapping from the crowd faded out and was replaced by an awed silence. He set his club behind the ball and lined up his feet in the direction of the hole. No practice swing this time. He'd use whatever was there. No matter how hard you tried, it always seemed like the practice swing was much better than your actual swing. He and Paul had often joked about Scott's need to take practice swings, and occasionally Scott would allow his ball to be in the way when he took one. This was one of those times. Scott closed his eyes for a moment and pictured the ball sailing across the pond and rolling onto the green. He could do it. He knew he could. He felt it. Something had given him the confidence, or perhaps the stupidity, to take the shot, and he wasn't going to ignore it. He looked at the ball, at the yellow duck with orange feet and beak and black beady eyes. The song, Rubber Ducky, from Sesame Street ran through his head for a moment. Rubber Ducky, you're the one. He smiled even more. What water? He said to himself one more time. As he drew back the club, starting the motion that would end with his ball leaving the tee for the last time that day, no one watching on the course, at the clubhouse, at the television station, or in any one of millions of homes, breathed. More prayers were said in that second than during the whole time the Titanic was sinking. Everyone, save perhaps Andrew Patterson, willed Scott Hanover to make the shot. The impossible shot that would cap a really good day. No, strike that. An amazingly incredible day for Scott Hanover. His left heel lifted from the ground, and his left knee turned in. At the bottom of his field of vision, his left shoulder appeared and pointed directly at his ball. The club hovered somewhere above his head, balanced and coiled, ready to strike. The next thing he heard was the plink as the club head struck the ball and sent it out over the water. His body was facing the pin, his right heel now off the ground, and his club hanging over his left shoulder. It was so fast, so perfect, he didn't even have time to feel it. Oh my God, he muttered as the ball lifted higher and higher, further and further. The crowd gasped together. Those along the far left side of the water were the first to see the result of the swing. Their view of the shot from the side was not affected by optical illusions that could confuse one's depth perception. They saw first what Scott Hanover would realize a moment later. His ball, beautifully hit, was going in the water. Alf Redding had his camera on the ball as it arced through the air. He hoped it would have the extra kick, but as it started to fall, the trajectory was clear. A few in the crowd shouted, "No! No!" Many felt grief, as if a loved one had passed. They had wanted this for Scott Hanover more than anything in the world. "It's wet, Scott," Paul said from behind him. Scott remained silent. He pushed the ball with his mind as hard as he could. "Come on," he encouraged. "Get over there." Andrew Patterson smiled. For him, it was finally turning out to be a really good day. Thank you for listening to A Really Good Day, a novel by James Hosek, narrated by Rich Hosek. If you're interested in purchasing a hardcover edition of this story for yourself or a golfer in your life, visit jimbooks.myshopify.com. You'll get free shipping in the United States. You'll also get the complete audiobook and ebook editions with your purchase. And make sure to subscribe to the mailing list for updates about the upcoming release of his Doctor at Mystery series, Cozy Mysteries about a Crime-Solving Veterinarian. Thanks again, and all the very best.